Captain Schroeder put his hands in the air and called for calm so that he could explain. He took off his hat and mopped his brow with his handkerchief.
I have just been to see President Brew to appeal to him personally for you to be allowed to disembark, the captain said, but he would not see me.
There were dark mutterings among the passengers, and Joseph felt himself getting angrier. What was going on? Why had the Cubans promised the passengers they would let them in, only to turn them away now?
Worse, Captain Schroeder said. The Cuban government has ordered us to leave the harbor by tomorrow morning.
Leave by tomorrow? Joseph thought. And go where? And what about his father? Would he be leaving with them? Cries of anger came from the passengers, and Joseph joined in. The first officer had disappeared briefly, but now returned with more sailors in case there was violence. Joseph wondered if he should bring his mother to hear this news, but he knew she was in their cabin, most likely in bed, crying. She blamed herself for her husband's suicide attempt, and in the last 2 days she had become, in a way, as absent a parent as Joseph's father. No, Joseph was the one who needed to be here right now, for his mother and for Ruthie. Captain Schroeder called for quiet again.
We are not going home. We will cruise the American coast and make appeals to President Roosevelt. If any of you have friends or family in the States, I beg you to ask them to exert what influence they can. No matter what, I assure you, I will do everything in my power to arrange a landing outside Germany. Hope must always remain. Now, please, go back to your cabins. I must return to the bridge to make the ship ready for our departure.
The crowd mobbed the captain as he tried to leave C deck, the passengers pushing and shoving their way around Joseph. Joseph fought his way to the passenger who had translated for Officer Padron the other day and pulled him to where the policeman stood.
What about my father?
Joseph asked Officer Padron through the translator.
I saw him in the hospital, the policeman told Joseph. He's not well enough to come to the ship. Then can we go to him instead? Joseph asked.
The policeman looked pained.
I'm sorry, little man. You cannot leave the ship.
But the ship is leaving, Joseph said. He could feel the pulsing engines under his feet.
We can't leave my father behind.
I wish from the bottom of my heart that you will land soon, little man, Officer Padron said again. I'm sorry, I'm just doing my job. Joseph looked deep into Officer Padron's eyes, searching for some sign of help, some hint of sympathy. Officer Padron just looked away. Joseph was still standing there in the hot Cuban sun when, right before lunch, the policeman left on a launch. Officer Padron still wouldn't look at him. Once the little boat was clear, the MS St. Louis blew its horn, raised its anchor, and left Havana Harbor, destination unknown. As he stood at the rail with the rest of the passengers, saying a tearful goodbye to the only place that had ever promised them refuge, Joseph said goodbye to his father as well. He took his shirt collar in both hands and ripped it along the seam, rending his garment as he'd done when Professor Weiler had been buried at sea. Joseph knew Papa was still alive, but it didn't matter. His father was dead to his family. And so, Joseph realized, was their dream of joining him in Cuba.